Hello and welcome to Clamp, the weekly podcast where we discuss all things related to creating, living, and making projects. I'm your host, Grant Alexander, and joining me as always is Jesse Ratfink and Adam Mackey. Tonight, we have a special guest. You may have seen her on TV shows such as This Old House or in print in popular woodworking. If you happen to be in Atlanta, you might have been lucky enough to have her as a teacher at her makerspace, Decatur. Please welcome Char, the TV star, a.k.a. the Wooden Maven.
What's up? Thank you for that amazing intro.
So for any of our listeners who haven't heard who you are, could you give them the lowdown?
Sure. I'll give you the 60-second lowdown.
All right.
20 years ago, I could not afford my first bed, so I figured out how to build it with a $10 battery-powered screwdriver and a borrowed drill. I fell in love with power tools and woodworking, and then I spent the next, 15 years wishing that I could quit my job and just be a woodworker. I spent all of my money on tools, lumber. I'm not into clothes or handbags or shoes. I'm a tool addict. And I decided to quit my job 8 years ago and pursue woodworking full time. Thank goodness it paid off because I did not have a backup plan. So here I am.
Nice. Yeah. And that is obviously paid off because you're all over the place. I see you everywhere now.
I know. Ah. I think last month I was 4 different cities in a month. I was home maybe like 5 days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. So I met you in real life at Maker Camp.
Oh, that's right. That was last month. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Yeah, so like, it was a year ago.
No, it feels like a long time ago, but it was a little bit over a month ago. But October. So here we are. It's November. And we wanted to have you on because you are a woodshop teacher as one of the many things that you do. And we wanted to talk a little bit about teaching and a little bit about like how you adapted your teaching to the virtual world, because I know you've done virtual classes as well as hands-on in-person classes. And that's what we wanted to try and dig into a little bit because of your expertise in that area.
Let's dig, baby.
All right. So why don't you start by giving a little background about your teaching and when did it start and what do you teach?
I started teaching in 2018, Woodshop 101, which was going over proper and safe usage of the table saw, miter saw, drill press, bandsaw. Then I also started teaching children as young as 7 how to use those tools, not the table saw, but all the other tools. I'm like, here, just stand on this box. Don't put your fingers right there, okay, Johnny?
Right. Unless it's a saw stop. And then
unless it's a saw stop. They don't sponsor me, by the way. Were you at saw stop? No, they're good people. So that was the first thing that I started teaching. My kids, my twins, I started them when they were 5. So I started them turning on the lathe at 5 and using the bandsaw at 5. So now they can use the miter saw. They have their own drills. I let them use my Origin.
So I have a 5-year-old.
Yes.
And I'm not comfortable giving him a hammer some days.
Okay. So let me say this. Your thinking is probably right because most people will not teach children. And I'm like, don't bring your kids to me. You know your kid. Like, if you know your kid is clumsy, I cannot help him. But right. Some people are like, no. My kid's got it. And I could tell, like, within seconds when I have a class, I'm like, okay, this kid is not going to pay attention at all. So I'm not going to let them use the saw. Right? Like, yeah. I know immediately. I know in every group who is going to do what. Like, who's going to challenge me? Like, if it's a group of, like, 5 guys, right? Or if I'm taking like one of those weekend classes at a store, if it's 5 guys, one of them is going to ignore me. One of them is going to treat me like his granddaughter. One of them's going to treat me like their daughter. And one of them is going to try to hit on me. Every group. In every group. I'm just like, okay, which one? I usually know. I'm like, okay, it's him. Okay.
So is one of them going to be really good, though?
Yeah. Like, one of them will, like, show off. Like, I already know how to do this. I'm like, so why are you taking this class, bruh?
Is it Ron Swanson?
I know more than you. It's a funny joke from a TV show that's clearly trying to make fun of those people. But to tangent a little bit in your story, I remember you were on another podcast. I can't remember which one, but you were talking about how you were teaching a course and you got there and there were people already there. And they were wondering who was going to be the teacher. Do you remember telling this story?
I do.
All right. You take it away because it's your story.
Yeah. When I first started teaching at the Makerspace, I do classes a little bit different. Usually people walk into a class and, you know, they're like, okay, this is what we're going to be learning today. I sit down, we have a kumbaya moment. So what have you built? What are you working on? What do you hope to get out of this class? And we're standing around talking. It's a, you know, a group of four or five people. And I said, okay, well, I think we're waiting on one more person. Let's wait. Give them 5 minutes. So guy walks in late. You could tell he's rushing, rustling his jacket, you know. He comes in. I'm like, hey, how's it going? Are you looking for something? He said, yeah, the woodworking class. And he kind of like looks at me like, why are you asking me? And he keeps walking. I'm like, oh, excuse me. I'm the teacher. And the look on his face was like, what? I'm like, yeah. So we get inside. You know, once I start talking, people realize that I actually do know what I'm talking about. And as I've progressed in this woodworking world, I've realized something about myself, that I identify as a white man. When I am talking to another like white guy, I mean, I feel like I'm talking to, you know, a guy, because we're just like chopping it up about tools. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we got a Turner's blade on the saw. You know, where did we get that from? Okay, cool. Because I got these logs. I want to, you know, we're talking. And then I realize like they're looking at me and it's just not connecting for them. But in my head, I'm like a white dude. I'm just, you know, have this curly hair and whatever.
Well, I'm sure that is one of the things I wanted to kind of delve into is this like perception and how do you overcome it? Because there's going to be listeners to our podcast that are trying to deal with this. Like my mother was the first, she's half Inuit, and she was the first person in all of Ontario, which is my province, to take a wood shop instead of home ec.
So impressive.
Yeah. So this is like one of those things that I'm sure she had people like, well, why would you want to do that? Right? Like these, you know, stories and questioning her and why she should even be in a room. So, you know, maybe some strategies you've used.
Sure. I believe that everybody has a gift and a purpose. And sometimes living out that purpose is not easy. And a lot of people don't get the opportunity to discover what they're here on earth to do. Thankfully, I did. I know that I was born to create things with my hands. And I am here to share that gift and that knowledge with other people. And because I know that is what my purpose is on earth, I know that I'm going to be met with isms, sexism, racism, colorism, all of it. But I don't let that stop me from doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I let someone get under my skin once and it hurt really bad, really bad. And I said to myself that I would never let anybody make me feel this way again, because I knew that this is what I'm going to do with the rest of my life and that I'm going to be met with this for the rest of my life. Like, at no point in my lifetime will woodworking be a normal thing for women of color. It just won't.
Right.
Not in my lifetime, maybe in my children's. But I'm like, I'm not going anywhere And I, after that, whenever someone says something or does something, or I feel like I'm being discriminated against, I'm like, well, whatever. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. Like, I'm obviously doing something right. You know, I'm crushing it because I decided to lean in, because people would say, oh, Char, the Black female woodworker. I said, I just want to be the woodworker. And someone's like, girl, lean into that. I'm like, fine. I will lean into it. And then when I leaned in, I mean, when I tell you, things just started to open up for me. I said, okay, fine. I'll be your token, because everybody needs a token, right?
Yeah.
But I have the skills to back it up. It's not just, oh, you know, I was about to say a brand name, Char with a particular brand name, like a cheap brand name. I think we all know who I'm talking about, but we aren't going to use any names because I am not a tool snob at all.
Grant is.
Well, Grant, we can talk offline. I don't want to offend anybody.
Grant is public about it.
Okay, well, I think she's trying to not say that particular brand, so let's continue.
Well, Grant, since you're not quiet about it, can you share what your brand of choice is?
So I don't have a brand of choice. What I have is people think that some certain cheap tools are very, very good, and they're worthy of some praise, and I just keep going, they're garbage, and that's fine, because you paid nothing for them. You paid nothing, you got garbage, that's what you're supposed to be getting. Right.
Grant's brand is any tool that's not green.
I also just don't like the color. But so they used to be blue, and I loved that color. Yes, and it was a nice blue.
Yes, I just gave away the first router table that I had that was blue and red. But you know what? You know why I gave it away? The T-track for the miter gauge is not like a standard size. So like no other, and I'm just, anyway, I digress. So
two things. One, Grant, are you listening to sometimes it takes time for people to find what they're here for?
No. Continue.
Because you like to give me shit for changing hobbies so many times, because I'm still trying to find what I'm here for. And I think it's blanks. And two, Char, I think that you are the opposite of Chris Rock in Down to Earth. You know that movie?
Oh. No,
we missed the last part of it. I heard Chris and then it cut out.
Oh, the opposite of Chris Rock in Down to Earth. Do you know that movie?
Mm-hmm.
He's an old rich. So he dies, and God
yes,
into like another body. So he's an old rich white guy, but he's like in his heart, he still sees himself as a black man. When you were saying that you identify as a white woodworker man, I was just thinking.
Yeah, there you go. It's down to earth.
Those are my people. Yeah. So when my oldest daughter was younger, she was in the Girl Scouts, and some of the other mothers that just weren't my people. So I would be like in the corner, like talking to the dads, because they would have like the garage open. We'd be at their house, you know, the Girl Scouts have their little tea party, and I'm like talking to the dads, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I see you got that new chainsaw. We're like chopping it up. And then I realized, you know, like some of the moms were like looking at me out the corner of my eye, like, why is she over there with the guys talking to my husband? So when my daughter told me she didn't want to do Girl Scouts anymore, I was like, thank you. I cannot fake it and be around those moms. I mean, I enjoy talking about power tools. I just do. And I don't know how, I don't have to apologize for it or whatever. That's just my thing. And it's only weird because I'm black and because I'm a woman and because I look younger than I am. I just had a birthday, by the way.
Same issue, the looking younger than you are. I get so much shit just for that.
Right?
I'm almost 40, y'all.
Right? I'm like, I'm a grown-ass woman. I'm 87. I'm collecting social security. I mean,
I know you heard the clearly both 21.
Black don't crack, okay?
All right.
It's awesome. Not well.
So, yeah, me either. So, let's get us back on track. You were talking about what you teach. You teach wood shop, and you started in 2018. I think that's where we got on a tangent.
Okay,
that's
how far
we got into it. No, it's my bad. Okay. I'm the host here. I'm trying to rein you in, so I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Teaching, yes. So, it started off with wood shop. Then it went to kids, birdhouses, right. Toolboxes, the basic thing. Then I started getting calls to teach out of state. Mm. So there's a coveted craft school in Baskerville, North Carolina called Penland. Mm. And I got invited to teach at Penland. We did shaker tables. Norm Abrams inspired shaker tables and cutting boards. I mean, we had the roughest lumber. So we went through the whole process of milling. And the people that take classes at Penland, they spend thousands of dollars for these classes. And they're usually 1 week or 2 weeks long. So it's not a 9 to 5. We showed up at 9, took breaks for lunch and dinner. And then after dinner, people were back in the shop. We were there till 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow. So it's like maker camp, but all week.
But all week. And it was such an amazing experience. So I get to travel. I've taught in Vermont twice. Everywhere you can think. I've been to Wisconsin, all these random places that I would never have gone to. Des Moines, Iowa, to do an episode of the Woodsmith Show.
Mm-hmm.
My episode airs next month, I believe.
Yeah, December 23rd.
Exciting. Oh,
looked it
there
up.
We
go. Oh,
because I went to go watch it. I was like, I can get some, like, you know, like right before. And I was like, this video's not available yet. And I'm like, ah.
So fun fact, that show has been on for 18 seasons and they've never had a person of color on the show.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Oh, I am the first.
Wow.
Have they ever had a woman on?
I'm pretty sure they've had a woman on.
Okay. I was like, maybe first. You never know.
They've also never done anything with children. And I think that's the different thing that I bring to the space is a lot of the things that I do don't incorporate kids. When I went to Wisconsin, I did a couple of episodes with the Woodworkers Guild of America. They had never done anything with children. So we had two, I think they were junior high students come in and I taught them how to build a mobile workbench. We built mobile workbenches. We built catapults. When I was on the Woodsmith show, my co-star, her name is Millie. She's so cute. I can't wait for you to watch it. She's adorable. I think she's like 9. So she and I taught her how to use, you know, the pocket hole jig, basic things that you could do, and just getting them immersed in learning. And college is great, but I mean, let's be honest. Is college for everybody? I mean, it's like $8 million to go to school. You never pay off those stupid student loans.
Well, that's an American problem. But so
we will get into the
politics about this. But I will say any kind of education, I think, can be great. And if you were free, I would encourage everyone to go and take any education they want, whether it be college/university or something hands-on. Like, you know, I live near a college that does like heritage woodworking classes, and I could go there, but you have to take a whole like 1 year long thing. And I'm like, I can't take a year off my, you know, good government job just to have fun with that.
My stance on woodworking is that I want to make it accessible for everybody so that you don't have to spend a year learning how to do it. And it's more about building confidence than it is about you learning to use a tool. Mm-hmm. The last class that I taught a week ago, we made cutting boards. There was a lady in my class who had just retired. So she was probably in her early 70s. had never used a table saw in her life. Her dad had one, her brother had one. And I said, I'm just grateful to be here for your first experience in your 70s with a table saw. And I'm only here to give you confidence. I mean, this one, and one lady, she said, there is some movie she watched. And she said, all I can think about is this movie I watched. And this kid like got sliced in half on a table saw. And she was like terrified. And I'm like, what movie was that? And what table saw can slice somebody in half? Okay. But she was terrified to use the saw. Like, I could see the fear. And I'm just like telling her everything that could go wrong. Let's not do those things. You got this, babe. Right. And they like, they crushed it. And that's what makes it different. I think about me being me than maybe like someone else, a man teaching them how to use power tools, right? Because then they're going to start using fancy words. Okay, make sure you account for the curve. And, you know, where's your gauge to check the 90 degree angle? And I'm like, okay, this is what you need to check. And you need to do this. And this is what this is called. And I'm going to write it on the board. And they're like taking pictures of it. Huh. I think Adam was going to say something.
Yep.
I forget what
but we're it looks.
Oh no!
You forgot. All right. So, in that, do you? How do you translate that to the online world? Because there was something that happened a couple of years ago that made it so that it was a little bit more difficult to have in class stuff. And I know you didn't just stop teaching. And like you just said, you want to make it inclusive for everyone. Well, not everyone can make it down to Atlanta or Wisconsin or Iowa or any of those other fun places you're teaching. So how do you make it so that you can reach out to them and anyone else who needs to be taught?
When I was teaching online, I would do a two-hour class. The first hour or so was spent online where I had a PowerPoint. We went over all the basics of woodworking. What tools do you need to start? The different type of cuts. The science of sanding, different type of fasteners, reading grain direction. And then I would go outside. I would have everything already set up in my shop. We would take a 3-minute break, have everything set up in my shop, transition out there, and I would build a quick project. And I would focus on one tool, whether that was how to use the miter saw. And believe it or not, I mean, to us, these things may be second nature, but some people are like, literally, where do I stand? Mm-hmm. Why can I not stand behind the blade? Or can I cut the wood this way? I don't understand. And I'm like, that's what this class is for. So we would either do cuts on the miter saw, maybe assemble a box and pocket hole joinery. And I would just give them tips that aren't necessarily readily available online for making stronger joints.
So this was like a live Zoom call thing?
Yes. Yes. All the classes that I taught were live. And I feel like that's better because you get that engagement. Like, my purpose is to help you. And if you have a question, I could answer it in real time. So I would save time at the end for questions when people would say, I want to know how to do shiplap. Then I would go and grab my palm router. And I said, okay, this is what you need, and this is the bit that you need, or I would have something in the shop where I can just pull it and show them. I just want people to walk away and feel like, okay, I got something out of it, because we've all done an online class where we're like, I just wasted 2 hours of my life that I can't get back.
I struggle a lot with things like that. Like, if I need to see how to do something like on the motorbike or woodworking or whatever and watch a video, I'm usually pretty good. But when I'm trying to learn a new skill that I've never done before, I need that instant feedback. I need that. Mm-hmm. I need someone to guide me. Like, watching a video doesn't help if I don't have the skill already.
Right.
Yeah. So have you ever done where you've watched someone else trying to do it remotely? Like, they're on the lathe and you're like, well, that's not the way you hold it. Or is that something that you think can only be done in person?
No. I think you can certainly teach that online, but hands-on learning will always be better. But then you also have to keep in mind, everybody learns differently.
Right.
Right? Some people, like Adam was saying, I need you to show me exactly how to do this specific thing. Like, you're assuming I already know what this tool is. I like to do something, mess up, read about it, or have someone show me and then go try again.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And some people say, teach me like I'm five.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm one of those people where, like, if I can't do it the first time, I sort of like, oh, I can't do it. I don't have the skill for it. I need someone that's there that can say, this is what you're doing wrong, because I can't work out what I'm doing wrong on my own.
Mm. Well, on the way to school, every day I do a TED Talk for my children. If you want me to, like, call you, give me some encouragement, you can do this. You got this. Okay.
I love that.
That's awesome.
So, have you ever done any, like, written instruction, or you just did a video person, or have you translated all of your skills into some sort of written instructions as well?
Oh, yes. They're all over the place. We did a cutting board series last week with Woodworkers Guild of America. We did a live. It was me and George Van Driska and two other makers. So we had to write plans for that. So those are available on their website. I did a drunken cutting board, which I like telling people I glued all those little pieces of wood together. It was a headache.
Oh,
how you really make it.
But it was beautiful. I saw that on Instagram tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, so there's lots of plans. I used to work with Popular Mechanics. Mm-hmm. Popular Mechanics is a magazine, but they wanted to translate some of their plans into video. So I did the video, but then I also had to write the plans. So yeah, gotcha. I have my plans. Some of my plans are everywhere. I work with Rockler Woodworking. I do plans for them for different projects, various projects using their products.
What do you think are the pros and cons about teaching in all these different ways? And, like, beyond the, like, different people learn differently, there's things that make certain things more, I don't know, easier to, like, I like reading about something more than I like to watch a video, because I find videos too slow often.
Hmm.
Right? Because, like, if you watch a video and the person's like, well, okay, now I'm going to make these cuts. And it's like, okay, yeah, you made the cut. And then I make, okay, you've made another cut. You've made another, okay, I get it. And if you read it, it's like, cut the pieces to this length. Okay, great. I can, you know, it's not like grab the miter saw, pull down the, you know, they don't go into that detail. And it's like, I find I can get to the part that I don't understand quicker if it's written.
Hmm. Interesting. Some people are visual learners. And some, like you said, everyone learns differently. And I feel like the people who want to come learn in person do. And the people that want to watch my videos, watch them. I try not to be the teacher for everybody, because I can't.
Okay.
Interesting. I cannot be for everybody. Like, my personality might not be, well, I know my personality is not for everybody. I figure that out. And I'm okay with that. Everybody is not right. gonna like me. Everybody is not gonna agree with me. But it doesn't matter to me.
So then I guess the thing you're saying is try and figure out which way you work best. If you want to be a teacher, if you want to inspire people, if you want to, like, pass on your knowledge, figure out the way that you enjoy and you feel like actually gets the stuff across. That's the kind of advice you're trying to say. Don't try and do it all.
No, that's exactly, I'm so glad that you put it that way. That's exactly it. What you said, I should have been writing that down, but can you say that again?
I know. This happens a lot. And luckily this is actually recorded so they can go back, but this happens at work all the time. I'll say something and they're like, can you say that again? That was really good. And I'm like, no, words that come out of my mouth are gone. They're gone. They're out there. So
maybe that can be the reel for this
week. Yeah. Maybe that can be the reel for this week. But okay. So I think, you know, we talked a little bit about all that different stuff. Does anyone else have any other? Maybe Jesse, you've been pretty quiet.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of fangirling a
little bit. Oh, okay.
So I guess I'm sort of curious, do you feel that virtual classes have as much impact as the in-person classes? because like I have done both, and the in-person classes, they're just overwhelming a little bit, but I do think they're really impactful. But yeah, I would sort of like to know your opinion on if it's worth it, like for maybe someone like me who's introverted really, really intensely, to like try to do the in-person stuff more often. Because, you know, there is some stuff you miss out online.
Yeah. I'm glad that you recognize that about yourself. That's very important to know, like what spaces make you feel safe. And especially if you're with somebody like me, like my energy is high. And I think that's why people like taking my classes, is because I have good energy and I want to give you that energy. But the energy level is like so strong that it like emanates even online. So whether it's online or in person, if online makes you feel better, you stick to that. Of course, as a person, I would encourage you to seek out in-person classes, but I get it. Sometimes being around people is overwhelming. Yeah. And you're just like, I can't go outside. It's expensive and there's people. So I
that's my life. Yeah.
Do what makes you happy.
Quickly for Jesse, you better get over it before Maker Camp next year, because that's going to be the worst spot to go straight into in-person stuff.
Yeah, y'all need to stop saying that to me. I'm getting scared.
It'll be fine. It's in a big open field. You can walk away. I think they have acres and acres of property, so you can get away.
Jesse, you'll be fine. Jesse, it's fine. It's not that bad. I will say this, it's cold. Well, you live in Colorado.
Yeah.
So you might, I'm from California, and let me tell you, I was not prepared, okay? It was like raining extremely hard. We're standing in a foot of water, and I'm building a workbench. And I just like looked at them. I said, I'm done for the day. Do you really expect me to like woodwork? And they're like, oh my gosh, she's such a diva.
Now you start to scare me.
Well, there's no way somebody expected you to continue working. There's no way.
No.
Electricity was gone.
No. We still had power in the restoration tool tent. We were doing mostly hand tools. We were restoring hand tools. And we just had some power. But there were cords like running through our tent. I'm standing there with like the circular saw. I can't feel my fingers or my face.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just like, what? They're like, Char, are you okay? I'm like, no. I am not. I went back to the RV, because if you think I'm standing in a tent, no. I went back to the RV. I put on my pajamas, and it was like me and five other people, and we sat there for 5 hours and talked. And that was the best. Get an RV, Jesse. Yeah. Don't stay in a tent.
Yeah.
Yes. So it was, you know what my favorite part about Maker Camp was during the rain? Everyone left and I could get in. I didn't have to wait in line for everything. Half the stuff I wanted to do was closed because either the fire got burnt out from the rain at all the forges, or the electricity was out at the totem pole tent. And of course I was at the point where I needed to do the hair dryer or heat gun thing, right? Like I literally was like standing there, like next in line to use the heat gun, and electricity went out, and I was like, right? I was standing in a foot of water, but I was like, if I die this way, at least I died at the Maker Camp.
But, in memoriam.
Pretty sure that's why they turned it off, because there was literal cords going everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so selfish part of me wants to ask you, in the teacher side of it, how do you adjust to working out what someone needs to learn from you? Because, you know, everyone is so
different. Yeah, so that's why I ask them at the beginning of class what they hope to get out of it, what their prior experience is, because that is how I set the tone for each class. If it's, I haven't taken wood shop since grade school or whenever they were offering it, which was 50 years ago, then I know we have to start over because tools have changed. Or someone's like, yeah, I used a miter saw once then I know I have to start at the beginning. But if everybody in the class is like, oh yeah, I've used a saw, then I can kind of level up a little bit. And I'm say, okay, this is where we stand. And this is why we stand there. I'm like, I'm just going to go over this really quickly because this saw may be different from yours. This is where you lock it. This is where you pull the trigger. This is how you make bevel cuts. Notice the table. You know, we go over those things rather than, okay, this is the grain. This is running across the grain. We rip this, you know, that kind of stuff. So I ask at the beginning of class all the time what people's expectations are and where they are in their maker journey. And then some people check out. I can tell people check out halfway. Like some people come and they just want to get the basics. And some people are like, well, I'm about to build a house. So I need to take this class. I need to know how to use all these tools. We're about to start flipping houses.
That's funny. So what happens when you have a disparity, when you have like a beginner and someone, like when the level of knowledge is so different, how do you balance that so that you're not leaving someone behind, but so that you're also not, boring. Right.
If I have somebody that's more advanced, I usually empower them to assist somebody else. And I can tell that. Cool. I can say, hey, would you mind watching her on the miter saw while I go show him the bandsaw? Sure, no problem. So I think all teachers, not just shop teachers, but teachers, they have this ability to recognize students' level of wherever they're at. They have to, you know? I'm pretty sure, like you guys see, right. Or some teachers are like, why you have, you know, and your kids at school, why you have my kid doing this? You know, he can do that. And we don't have time to work individually with every, you need to figure it out. Anyway, I'm not being like that, but I can tell pretty quickly. Once I had a group of high school students and one of the kids was autistic. Like very high on the spectrum. And the other kids somehow just like stepped up and really grasped what I was saying very quickly because I had to work with this kid a lot. And I felt like during that class, like I was only there for him. I was only there for him because he, you know, repeated everything I said, showed me everything he did, was very excited. And I said, my job for today is just to make sure that he feels special, you know, because the world is just not nice to people who are different.
That's true.
Yeah. It was fun. If you can walk and talk, I can teach you. Well, you don't even have to talk. If you can walk, I can teach you.
It's you like don't even have to walk.
You're right. If you have hands. We have a member at our space that only has one arm and she turns on the lathe and one of our other members built a sling for her to like help her hold the turning gouges to help her turn better. Yep. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we have some of everybody. I had to like send a kind of passive aggressive message on Slack last week because one of our members is a little person and he was like, have you seen the crosscut sled? And I'm like, yeah, it's way up there. So I like got it down for him and I sent a message. I'm like, I put the crosscut sleds on the floor so that everybody can reach them. And that's all I said. I'm like, please leave them on the floor. Thank you.
Right. It's so easy for people to not, like, obviously there's no bad intentions there. They're not doing it. Like, I want to make sure that they, but it's so easy for you to just think about it for a second, right? It's so easy for you to think about it for a second and think about those different diversity considerations that people do not think about. And if you just took a second and go, like, I'm not the only person. And it's just the same with like tall people. Like, just tall people alone can put stuff up on a shelf and just go, now nobody can reach it, right? It doesn't have to, you just got to think about who you're working with and how what you're doing affects the next person.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's one of the good things about the maker community, because I truly believe that making creates empathy. because, yeah, the maker community, they are so helpful. And, you know, me as a crazy, paranoid, anxious person, you know, I do need a little bit of help and a little bit of encouragement. And I have always gotten that. And anytime, you know, at Instructables, Autodesk, like with shop stuff, we were able to make so many accommodations for people, and people would put in so much like effort for assistive technology and that sort of stuff. And it just, yeah, I love making, I think, just because it does give you a bigger view of the world. You don't assume that everyone is the same as you. It just, yeah, it opens your mind quite a bit. And that is one of the things that I really enjoy about it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you know what I really enjoy?
Our patrons.
You're right. So I especially want to thank our F-Clamp level patrons, Scott from Dad It Yourself DIY, Joe Herdina, Rich from Lowen Designs, David Wood from DW Wood Builds, Brad from I'm Gonna Make, and Chad from Chad's Custom Creations. All those and everyone else who supports us on Patreon gets access to a pre-show where we had a great conversation, and then the after show, which we're going to continue the conversation, maybe some secret stuff there. So if you feel like you got a little bit of value out of this, please consider going over to patreon.com/clamp and supporting us there. And I'll also make you a numbered keychain and send it off in the mail. And now it's time for Clamp Mendations.
Clamp Mendations!
All right, so my clamp mendation for today is a jewelry maker. Her Instagram handle is Knot and Splice. I have loved her work for, I don't know, probably a decade now. One of these days, I'm going to own a ring from her. Her rings are, they're just so unique. There's a lot of texture in the metal. She uses like the most beautiful minerals and gemstones in them. They're all just one of a kind. You know, it's very not something you could find in a typical jewelry store, and I really like that. And last week when we were talking about newsletters we actually stay subscribed to, I didn't mention her. I've actually been subscribed to her forever because every time she comes out with a new collection, I look at it just because her work is amazing. So yeah, I really think everybody should go follow her because it's just stunning.
Okay, that was like really good. I don't know that I'm that detailed of a person. I'm like, yeah, I woke up and I did this today. So mine is not about social media, but I wanted That's to tell cool. you about music, book, and food.
All right.
So I came across this station, Relaxation Music for Studying. It's actually classical music set to like pop songs, which is really good. Yeah. For those of you who watch like Bridgerton, if you listen to it, it's like pop songs. And I actually enjoy classical music. So it's great when I'm trying to zone out. So if you need something, get into classical music, you'll recognize some of the melodies from popular songs. Really cool. Food. Okay, so there are 6 people that live in my house that all have different tastes, right? I feel like a short order cook because one doesn't eat fish, one doesn't eat shellfish, one doesn't eat beef, one only eats organic. And I'm just like, who wants some popcorn for dinner? Because I clearly don't know what to make you guys. So lazy cook night is dip night for dinner, right? You just put all the dips on the table, guacamole, salsa, queso, buffalo chicken dip, just put it on the table with some chips and some carrots. Somebody is going to say, is this a snack or dinner? You just say, are you kidding me? There's chicken. It's dinner, right? And it'll fill you up and it's all good. Okay. Also, I'm reading this lastly book. I got this book for my birthday. It's called Black Friend Essays. The author's name is Z-Way. She's a comedian too.
Yes,
you heard of her. Mm-hmm. And I like to tell people, like, I'm that Black friend that you could ask the questions to about Black people that you were like afraid to ask. You're like, I don't want to come across racist, but da da da. I'm like, yes, that's true. And I won't make you feel bad. So the book is about
that's
like
truly racist. Don't say it.
like people be like, will you pull my coat tail if I say something? And I'm like, I will tell you like secretly, I'm like, don't ever say that again. That was so racist. Like you can't say that, okay? But I'll say it with a smile so they won't feel bad. But anyway, it's a great book full of essays just about navigating white spaces in a Black body, but it's told in a comedic, sarcastic way. And I like it because I sort of embody that. Unless somebody's being like blatantly racist and, you know, I mean, this is the world that we live in. So we just navigate it the best we can with love and kindness. So that's mine for the day.
That's three great recommendations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Adam, you're up.
I hope I haven't done this one before, but my wife and I have been watching a TV show called 60 Days In. Have I done that one before?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So it's pretty crazy, but like, so the first season the whole thing started off with this prison. I can't remember where it was. But essentially they get civilians to go into prison under a false name and like a false arrest and everything. But they're like treated as real. The only people that know that they're there for a TV show is like the sheriff and one other person. So all the correction officers and everyone don't know. They just think they're real criminals. And they go in for 60 days, treated completely like real criminals. And they're there to like try and help with like, how can the correction officers work better? What are the issues in the jail? Like what's not going properly and all this. And like, it's such a crazy story. But like these people are... the way they're treated sometimes is insane. And like the prison system is crazy because it's all based in America. But like, and they're told when they go in, like you have no, like you are not allowed to do anything illegal. Like if you do drugs and stuff in jail, you will be prosecuted for real. Like there's no free will or anything. There's no like getting it. Like they go into like an interview room. Like, so like the film crew will come in and interview like heaps of people, not just the people in the show, so there's no suspicion. But they get taken to this like room where it's all like silence and everything, so no one can hear them. And they can theoretically get out early if they need to, but they still have to go, like they have to get processed out as if like they were really getting out of jail, so that they're not to raise suspicion and stuff. But it's insane, the shit that they see and the shit they have to go through is crazy.
Yeah.
I can't, like the amount of drugs in jail is insane. How they get it in there. It's
not. Right. It's the officers. It always is.
Oh, it is. How it happens.
Well, and there's drones are a big thing. Like they've been flying since drones, like since RC aircraft ever existed, because it's worth so much that you can take a cheap RC airplane or a drone and just crash it in there and you don't care.
Yeah.
Because like you could take $500 worth of remote control equipment and throw it away. If you make one of the 10 drops, it was worth it because stuff's worth so much money.
It's the same with like mules and stuff, because how much risk do they take putting drugs in a mule? But if one person gets through, it's worth it. But it's I don't know what's with these prisons. Like it's nothing like you see on TV. Like they literally spend their entire life inside the jail cells and stuff. Like not the cells, but like the common area. And then they go into their cells. They get one hour a week.
We have different levels
of
like prison, of incarceration. Well,
they call it, so they keep calling it
maximum
jail.
Security detention. Yeah.
I don't know, but they get 1 hour in rec a week. But the rec room is inside. They don't go outside at all.
Yeah, there's some like that. So I used to work.
Because there's an open window.
I used to work in access to information and privacy, or like the freedom of information for Americans listening, for our correctional service here in Canada. And I would have to review tapes and logs and stuff like that of people and what happened to them, because there were people who had made requests for their information. And it's crazy the stuff that happens in prison. And like you watch the TV shows, you're like, oh, that would never happen. That totally, stuff like that happens. It's insane. Yeah. Like it's a little mini different community. So it's a, I could not, there's not enough money to get me to go into prison for 60 days.
Mm-mm.
Well, I don't know. They don't talk about if they're getting paid or not. And I don't know if they are, but a lot of the people are going in because they want to fix the system. So they like they've got someone that's incarcerated, or they're a lawyer or something that wants to help fix the issues.
Yeah, so I just got on AATV because my first response was like, that doesn't sound great. Like, that sounds like they're taking advantage of a horrible situation for drama TV. But it looks like there are actually changes happening in the jails they're going to, which, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better. I get really worried about the exploitation of prisoners here in America. So my brain is just like going 100 miles an hour. But they're saying like Jeffersonville, Indiana, Atlanta, Georgia, Florence, Arizona, Gadsden, Alabama. So like there are at least a few people or a few places that have had changes, which is really nice to see.
We're only on season 4, I think. So we're only on the second jail, but they do like when they get out, they do like a full interview with them, like the sheriff does, and works out like what needs to change and what can be better and all that. So
I'm going to recommend that everyone check out my friend Ryan Cochran. You can find him by going to Cochran Kayak. He is a 2-time Olympian. So he went to the Olympics representing Canada, and he also went to the Pan Am Games and he was a gold medalist there. But now he is retired from sport and is a furniture maker, a woodworker, and a self-declared epoxy guy. But he is also working on a Maker Collab logo swap like I am. So I've been following along with that, and you should go check him out.
I love Ryan. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. See, there we go. We've ended it on something much more positive.
Nice.
Now we're going to go into the last little segment, and this one's going to be a silly one, but it's the Jessie's Ask Us Anything.
Yeah, and this week it's going to be a learning experience again because I don't have an answer for this. So the question is from DW Woodbuilds, and he says, what are the 3 primary chemical reactions in concrete? So do any of y'all know?
What a random question.
I love it. We're all just like, no.
Right. So I would say it's the chemical reaction. Like, I don't even know what he's trying to ask.
Well, yeah, see, me too. I went down a rabbit hole and I was like, okay, so there's 2 types of cement and different reactions happen in each. And like hydraulic cement is the most common, but I still am not really sure. So David, you need to tell us.
I don't even know what you're talking about. 2 different types of cement.
On what this is.
What's okay. The 2 different types of cement?
Hydration is a chemical reaction where you're hydrating the powder. That is, and then I guess dehydration would probably be another one. Like evaporation.
Okay. Calcination reaction.
There you go.
No, I don't. There's so
is there another question?
No, this is it. So if you would like another question, please, please, we're running low. And all we've got left are these fun ones from DW Woodbuilds. So if you'd like to not hear another one of the very dregs that we have left, please submit your questions to Ask Us Anything. And if you don't, then we're probably going to have to cancel this segment. But we'd love to hear from you.
I'm going to post a story tomorrow asking for more questions. I had already planned that because I saw we were getting really low.
Right. Well, I want to thank TF Turning for our theme song. I want to thank Shar for coming on. And this is your chance to tell everyone where to find you and plug anything you got coming up.
Google me. No, I'm kidding. No, seriously, Google me. But I'm most active on Instagram. My handle is Wooden Maven, MAVEN. You can find me next month on PBS, December 23rd, on Woodsmith Shop. And next year, you'll see me in a couple of commercials.
Oh, exciting.
Mm.
Yes.
That is exciting. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. It was a great time, great chat. And I guess we'll see everyone who listens in the after show, and everyone else, we'll see you next week.
Bye. 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 Thanks for having me.